The Lollipop Guild only listens to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you have tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today we have a busy show. We will hear from Kim Kelly, metalhead and author of the new book Fight Like Hell about the labor movement in this country. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And we'll hear radio news about where iPhones are going from Ukraine into Russia. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network, on air, in airwaves, controlled. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Saturday, April 23rd, turn out or tune in to hear the band I Heard It on the X perform at the track at Boom and Bloom, the record and flower shop in East Durham at 2176 Route 145. It's record store day, and the shop is having the band in to perform an homage to early ZZ Top. The band features ex-drummer of the Scissor Sisters, Patty Boom, and drums and vocals, and he hosts the Vinyl Freedom Show every other Tuesday at noon on WGXC. You can go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about the show. And you can also tune into a live webcast and broadcast on 90.7 FM of the show Saturday, April 23rd, 5 to 7 p.m. at the track at Boom and Bloom, the Records and Flower Shop in East Durham on Route 145, with I Heard It on the X on 90.7 FM WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit DedicatedPresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. John Kroppel reports for the Daily Gazette that State Attorney General's Office April 19th announced the first round of funding for Capital Region counties to assist in combating opioid abuse. The local share of the $5.78 million is the first portion of funding from the settlement of state lawsuits against manufacturers and distributors of opioids. Subsequent payouts will bring $32 million to the Capital Region. Quote, this is the result of our litigation against Big Pharma for the destruction and devastation they caused as a result of opioids, the devastation and destruction that unfortunately claimed so many lives and impacted so many families, unquote, New York Attorney General Letitia James said at a news conference. All 62 counties and the five largest cities in New York are receiving money this week. The local awards in the eight-county capital region include $473,000 to Greene County, $392,000 to Columbia County, $1,665,000 to Albany County, $758,000 to Rensselaer County, and $726,000 to Schenectady County. James's office said the first payments are from settlements from AmerisourceBergen Corporation, Cardinal Health, and McKesson Corporation. Later this year, the Capital Region counties will receive additional payments from settlements with Endo Health Solutions, Janssen Pharmaceuticals, and Allergan. Read more about this story in the Daily Gazette.
Andrea Mago reports for Porcupine Soup that the PFC Joseph P. Dwyer Veteran Peer Support Program is coming to Greene County. Greene County Veteran Service Agency Director Michelle Romalindeo says the program has had success treating post-traumatic stress disorder. Deo said, and I quote, PTSD claims account for the majority of all claims we file here at Greene County Veteran Service Agency, and most of those claims are combat-related. Additionally, PTSD often goes hand-in-hand with other mental health conditions, such as generalized anxiety and major depressive disorder. This is a major concern for us, end quote. The program will help some of the 3,500 veterans in Greene County, where the total population is about 47,000. Ulster County's Hudson Valley National Center for Veterans Reintegration will run the program as soon as the group hires a part-time veteran peer mentor and a full-time veteran peer support program manager. Dale said, and I quote, "We want to make sure everyone who served has the resources available to them to help make them whole again and keep them safe," end quote. You can read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting on a vote of 14-9. The Ulster County Legislature, April 19th, chose to give up some tax revenue, doing away with their share of the gasoline tax at the same time the state does. Democratic legislator Manna Jo Green voted against the measure because she said the world is facing a climate emergency and should move away from fossil fuels. Others, like Republican Ken Ronk, said every penny helps and not everyone has access to mass transit as an alternative to driving to work. Legislative Chair Tracy Bartles, a Democrat, supported the tax reduction but has some ideas on how to manage the estimated $3 million revenue loss to the county. Quote, "I propose a split of spending in three sectors, public transportation, food security, and green energy," unquote, she said. County Executive Pat Ryan said after the legislative vote, he was proud that the county is meeting the urgency of the moment, providing desperately needed relief for residents. The new gas tax structure will end at the end of the year. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Danielle Muyoyo Dunn reports at Politico that New York's Attorney General Letitia James is now investigating whether oil companies are taking advantage of inflation and the Russian invasion in Ukraine to raise prices. James said, and I quote, "Soaring gas prices are forcing working New Yorkers and low-income families to make difficult decisions on whether to pay bills or put food on the table. Price gouging is unfair and illegal, and my office is determined to make sure it doesn't happen in our state," end quote. The investigation will only look at companies supplying gas and diesel to New York. As the pandemic waned and Russia invaded Ukraine, energy prices have skyrocketed, much higher than the rate of inflation. New York Governor Kathy Hochul just reduced the state gas tax in the recently passed budget to give consumers some relief from the high prices. Read more about this story at Politico.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that Democratic officials in New York are searching for ways to remove ex-Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin's name from the June primary ballot. Benjamin is facing a five-count felony indictment based on allegations of fraud and bribery. He has suspended his campaign and resigned from office, but he will continue to appear on the June ballot for the Democratic primary contest, facing former New York City Council member Diana Reyna and activist Anna Marie Arkilla. The good government organization Common Cause New York said this week that state election laws for removing candidates from the ballot are too strict and should be changed. Quote, this is a huge problem for the 6.4 million registered voters in the Democratic primary who will confront a ballot that does not reflect the reality of the field and may end up throwing away their vote on a candidate who is not running for office, unquote, said Susan Lerner, Common Cause New York's executive director. Benjamin's name can be removed from the ballot if he moves out of state and is disqualified for holding elected office in New York. A bill that would address the issue would remove a candidate from the ballot if the person has received a life-threatening illness, faces criminal charges, or if they have resigned from the office they are running for on the ballot, but is unlikely to be approved in time for when voting begins in June. Governor Kathy Hochul, who faces the prospect of running without a preferred running mate, has acknowledged that the time for removing Benjamin is limited, but said in a radio interview this week it is being reviewed. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Two political prognosticators moved the re-election of Democrat Antonio Delgado to the 19th congressional district from likely Democrat to leans Democrat on April 20th. Both Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball and the Cook Political Report downgraded Delgado's chances of beating Republican Mark Molinaro, currently the Dutchess County executive, in November's election. Both analysts said the move was because of a national wave moving towards Republicans and not about the specifics of the Delgado-Molinaro campaigns. Sabato's Crystal Ball website said about the five Democrats that were moving from likely winners to leaning toward predicting a win, and I quote, in a Republican wave scenario, these are the kinds of districts that could get swept up. Republicans appear to have credible recruits in these districts that are raising enough money to be competitive, end quote. Republican National Congressional Committee spokesperson Samantha Bullock crowed about the political predictions. She said, and I quote, everyone can see the writing on the wall, and this will be Antonio Delgado's last term in Congress, end quote.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a chance of rain, mainly after 2 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 56 degrees. Thursday night, a chance of rain, mainly before 8 p.m. It will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 45 degrees. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 52 degrees. And Friday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 39 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Thursday, April 21st, there are so many different creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including musician Mohamed Motomedi is featured on the Transformational Listening Program at 11 a.m. on the radio. At noon, after the local news, Alan Skerritt is in live from Columbia County with his Crossroads and Rhythm show with R&B, blues, jazz, and more. At 2 p.m., Boundaries and Borders is the subject of What's the Frequency, Kenneth, the show that turns the news headlines and sets them to the latest music. At 4 p.m., the WGXC Afternoon Show is live from Hudson with Sella Graham and Tom DiPietro. At 7 p.m., Jonathan Oliver is the guest with Mike Porter and Andy Reid on the Catskill Cabin Getaway. 9, we're live with Andrew O'Connor from Toronto on the Disco 3000 show. And at 10 p.m., we are live with Ted Barron in Hudson with the Boogie Woogie Flu on the radio at 90.7 of MWGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page.
and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Saturday, April 23rd, turn out or tune in to hear the band I Heard It on the X perform at the track at Boom and Bloom, the record and flower shop in East Durham at 2176 Route 145. It's record store day, and the shop is having the band in to perform an homage to early ZZ Top. The band features ex-drummer of the Scissor Sisters, Patty Boom, and drums and vocals, and he hosts the Vinyl Freedom Show every other Tuesday at noon on WGXC. You can go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about the show. And you can also tune into a live webcast and broadcast on 90.7 FM. Of the show Saturday, April 23rd, 5 to 7 p.m. at the track at Boom and Bloom, the Records and Flower Shop in East Durham on Route 145 with I Heard It on the X on 90.7 FM WGXC. If you wonder about the Albany Hudson electric chair, there is a special exhibit at the Hudson Area Library from May 7th through June 30th. The exhibit features the interpretive panels along the Albany Hudson Electric Trail and historic images from the Electric Park, an amusement park at the Kinderhook stop of the old rail line that is now the Electric Trail. There is an opening reception for this exhibit in the Hudson Area Library's community room on May 7th at 3 p.m. and there's more details on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org about this event and many other community events that you may want to attend. And you can even put your own event up there. Click on Add an Event at the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org. And soon enough, you'll hear your event on the radio or find it online at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Thursday, April 21st. The early morning temperature span is 35 degrees in Olivaria to 38 in Ingram. Average soil temperature at a depth of 2 inches down is 44 degrees. We're going to have some midday chances of rain today, especially around 2 p.m. Some gusty winds will tag along. A high of 60 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight temperatures drop to 46 degrees. Tomorrow looks dry but windy with a high of 61. 40 degrees overnight takes us into a nice looking Saturday. Calm winds and a high of 60. A little rainfall happens just after dark, then overnight lows around 45. Sunday, dry and nice with a high of 73. Pollen levels for today will be high. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:10 a.m., high tide at 7:08 a.m., low tide again at 2:07 p.m., and high tide again at 7:54 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 47 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:27 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:02 a.m. Looking way up, we see flare activity is still going on, one causing a radio blackout over Australia yesterday. Telltale signs of a released CME were there. We are still waiting to confirm. Solar wind speed is currently 514 kilometers per second at 7.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 2 megahertz till dark, then looks like fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 80. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Name, Patty Boom. Host of Vinyl Freedom. Where? WGXC. When? Every first and third Tuesday from 12:10 to 2 p.m. What? Streaming online at WGXC.org. What? Tune in for a genre shakedown, all kinds of choice cuts of wax for you and yours to listen to. Dig it.
WGXC is made possible in part for the generous ongoing support of Sam Sebrin of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice. The world's only 12-hour strong man on the air, here on We Love Radio.
Gentlemen, happy boys, leave thy dear. Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Customs and Border Protection are processing up to 1,000 Ukrainians per day at a port of entry where border officials claimed they did not have capacity to even process 30 other asylum seekers per day for the past few years.
The U.S. has arrested more than 1 million asylum seekers at the Mexican border in the past 6 months. Al Otro Lado immigration attorney Erica Pinheiro says thousands of Ukrainians are at the border in Tijuana. Meanwhile, Panama and the U.S. have signed a commitment to make progress on migration issues. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
Increasing citizen security, combating the climate crisis, improving democratic governance that's responsive to people's needs.
Russia's government has rejected calls from the United Nations chief for a ceasefire in Ukraine during the Eastern Orthodox Holy Week to allow civilians to evacuate the country. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke Wednesday with Poland's Minister of Defense on humanitarian efforts ahead of bilateral talks.
You have helped the Ukrainian people fight for their country and escape from the horrors of war. You have provided much-needed security assistance to the Ukrainian military to help it continue to successfully fight back invading Russian forces.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen walked out of a G20 meeting in Washington Wednesday when Russia's finance minister began speaking. The Department of Education says it will retroactively help millions of federal student loan borrowers held back by income-driven repayment plans by ensuring any months in which borrowers made payments count toward loan forgiveness requirements and, in certain cases, grant forgiveness automatically. Student loan attorney Adam Minsky.
The system is a mess. It can be incredibly confusing for people to navigate. There's been huge documented problems with oversight of complex programs and the administering of those programs as well.
Income-driven repayment programs are designed to provide loan forgiveness to borrowers who have been making payments tied to their income for at least 20 or 25 years. But so far, few borrowers have successfully received forgiveness under those plans. South Carolina's Supreme Court on Wednesday issued a temporary stay blocking the state from carrying out what was set to be its first ever firing squad execution. Richard Moore, scheduled for execution next Friday, has chosen to die by firing squad rather than in the electric chair. Moore was convicted for the 1999 killing of convenience store clerk James Mahoney. The last execution by firing squad in the U.S. was in 2010. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1967. That was the day the Taylor Law went into effect in New York State. It was celebrated for granting public employees the right to organize and elect union representation. But it's also roundly criticized for stripping public sector workers of their right to strike. It was crafted and enacted in response to the militant, victorious New York City transit strike of January 1966. The Taylor Act amended key points of the 1947 Condon-Wadlin Act, which first prohibited public sector strikes in the aftermath of a teacher strike in Buffalo. But strikes persisted, and the act was seen as largely unenforceable. In the aftermath of the 1966 transit strike, New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller appointed a committee chaired by labor relations professor George Taylor to make, quote, proposals for protecting the public against the disruptions of vital public services by illegal strikes, while at the same time protecting the rights of public employees. In addition to granting the right to organize, the Taylor Act also establishes impasse procedures for dispute resolution, defines and prohibits improper practices, prohibits strikes by public employees, and established the Public Employment Relations Board. But public sector unions argue the law gives no incentive for employers to settle disputes or negotiate contracts in a timely manner or in good faith. While public sector unions have struck since its enactment, Transport Workers Union 100 was subjected to harsh fines in both the 1980 and 2005 transit strikes. During the 2005 walkout, TWU 100 was issued a $1 million a day penalty, its automatic dues collection was suspended, and its leader Roger Toussaint was jailed for 10 days. The union continues to push for changes to the law.
Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I'm an independent journalist. I used to be a heavy metal journalist. That was my whole life for a really long time. But after I helped organize my workplace at Vice when I was working there a few years ago, I sort of morphed from a heavy metal writer with a deep interest in working class history and politics to a labor reporter with a whole bunch of heavy metal tattoos. And after I got laid off in 2019, I decided to try and give it a go to be a labor reporter, to make it work. Still a heavy metal maniac and all that, but I devote my time to telling workers' stories and trying to uplift their voices and find space for their perspectives in a crowded media landscape that is basically run by powerful oligarchs. So I'm just kind of a human megaphone. That's how I see it.
Was it your coverage of the Warrior Met coal miners' strike that really got this project up and running?
I have to give a lot of credit to Teen Vogue, my editors at Teen Vogue, for giving me space to tell these stories there. Like, I've had a regular column there specifically focused on labor and working class history since 2018. I think when I first went down to Alabama in the beginning of the first Amazon union effort in Bessemer, I felt like I was really doing work that I was really proud of, and I felt like I was part of an important moment in our history. And honestly, I just have not been able to stay away from Alabama, covering that effort, keeping up with that, and then covering the Warrior Met strike for now over a year. It's getting that really essential on the ground reporting experience and building these really deep relationships with my sources who have now become my friends. That's been probably one of the coolest and most rewarding parts of this whole thing, of switching my career focus and, you know, going to less heavy metal shows and more union meetings.
How did the concept for the book come about?
Sure. Well, this is the labor book that I've always wanted to read. I know that sounds a little bit hokey, but I love history. I've always been a history nerd since I was little, and I always loved reading most about people that seemed like they were having a harder time or that were being left out of the equation, being left out of the picture. I'm from a really rural, isolated place, and once I got out in the world and realized what people were dealing with and how these, you know, interlocking systems of oppression were impacting people in my own community, I wanted to write more about their experiences. And, you know, there are a lot of scholars and academics who have done really important work in these fields, archiving and unearthing these stories. And sometimes it's a little bit hard for people to track those down and to access that work. And I thought it would be useful and fun and an interesting challenge to try and write a book that pulls together a lot of those less told, maybe more forgotten narratives and highlights some of these characters that have never really gotten their due in a book that's aimed at rank and file workers. It's meant to be accessible. It's meant to be kind of a fun read and will hopefully lead other people to that more in-depth scholarship and to that history and to do their own research after this. Like, I want this to be kind of an introduction, and then hopefully people will spring off of this and follow their particular interests and find out more about what really speaks to them.
Can you give us a sneak peek at some anecdotes from the book or any that pertain to upstate New York, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. But in the context of upstate New York, Troy has a really proud and vibrant labor history. So back in 1864, Irish immigrant women who were working in the collar laundry, you know, making shirt collars, they formed the first all-female labor union in U.S. history. It was called the Collar Laundry Union, and it was led by Irish immigrant women named Kate Mullaney and Esther Keegan, and they were incredible. Like, they had about 300 members. They fought for raises and won. You know, it didn't last super long, but those women who were involved became pillars of the labor movement after that. Like, they didn't stop because their first effort dissolved under boss pressure and, you know, just the circumstances of the time. They kept pushing. You know, they set a precedent. And I think that's really important to recognize what they did at that time. I mean, 1864 was not the most enlightened time, especially for women, especially for working class women and Black women, women of color. It was really difficult and really, like, daunting for those workers to try and organize and find themselves a voice at work and agitate for better wages and just demand to be treated like people. And so many of them did it and kept doing it. Like, it's so thrilling to be able to find those threads and tie them together and show people, like, look what we were doing back when we thought it was impossible. Anything you think is impossible now, someone's already tried it. And sometimes they pulled it off. I mean, I think about what happened at the Amazon warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama. Their first run, the union effort basically got crushed. Amazon did not play by the rules. I don't know if anyone ever expected them to, but they really went above and beyond to crush this union effort. So they reran another election. And we're still waiting for the results of that. But the thing about that is, you know, even if they don't win, I want them to win. I hope they win. But even if they don't, there's no taking back the power that those workers have built and the education that they've shared with one another about themselves and their lives and about the power of collective organizing. There are a couple people in particular I think of who I know are going to go on and have an incredible impact on the labor movement and change so many people's lives. Like, there's this one young man, I think he's about 20 years old right now. He was super involved in the union effort. He actually took off a couple semesters from school so he could be fully immersed in the union drive there. And he told me last time I saw him that he was going to switch his focus at school, and now he wants to become a labor lawyer. And he's going to impact so many workers' lives by doing that. And that's just one person out of over 1,000. You know, every time we see one of these labor struggles unfold and see people come out of it changed, like, that's how we keep pushing the movement forward. Like, it all starts somewhere. And even if you don't win a battle, like, I still do believe we will eventually win the class war.
My last questions are, how do you define a victory for this movement? And how do you see the role of the activist journalist in helping to bring that about?
There are a lot of different ways to win, and it depends on what your ultimate goal is, right? If your ultimate goal is the uplifting of the working class and a victory over the forces of capital, we might be waiting for a little bit. But if your goal is to successfully get your union recognized or to get a raise or to get a good contract, those are achievable goals. And even if you're not able to win them the first time you try, that doesn't mean you stop trying. Like, if workers in the 1800s had stopped trying to win a 10-hour workday or an 8-hour workday, Lord knows how much you'd be working now. You know, you just have to keep going. And every little win matters. Every victory matters. And every loss matters because you learn from that.
I think the labor movement's in a really exciting time. We're in a historic moment. There's a lot more public support for unions right now. There's a lot of interest in the idea of collective bargaining and working together and trying to take back some of the power that's been siphoned away from us. I think there's really nowhere to go but up. Like, I am a little bit of a Pollyanna about these things. And yes, union density is down. We're not in the strongest position we could be. That is an unpleasant but unavoidable fact. But we can change that. You know, we've done it before, and we'll do it again. And in terms of, I guess, my role and the role of media people in general, I think the best and most useful thing we can do is use whatever platforms we've built up or been handed to elevate the voices of workers. I think that's missing in some coverage of these movements. And that's ultimately the most important part of the story, because the workers are living it. The workers are doing it. The workers are in the battlefield. They're in the trenches. Being able to document the work they're doing and allow them a way to preserve and lift up their struggle, like, that's an honor. And I'm so glad that I'm able and allowed to do this kind of work, because I'm just in so much awe of the power of workers and the power of people who are standing up and trying to take back some of that power and advocate for their coworkers and leave things better. You know, you should always try and leave things in a better state than they were when you got there. And for a lot of people in this country, like, if you're born tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of garbage left for you to clean up. But that doesn't mean that it's not worth it to try. And I think that seeing people do that is really one of the greatest gifts that I've ever been given as a journalist, and just as a regular working class person too. Like, I never realized how powerful we could be until I really started paying attention.
The book is Fight Like Hell by Kim Kelly, and it's out from Simon & Schuster on April 26th. For Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Tom Rowe from Wave Farm with the WGXC Daily Radio News. Go to wavefarm.org for more information. Common internet tracking technology using radio waves is proving in real time that Russian soldiers are stealing phones, AirPods, and farm equipment from Ukrainians during their invasion of the European country. Forbes reports, for instance, that an advisor to the Belarusian Democratic Movement said, quote, Ukrainians are locating their devices on the territory of the Homiel region, Belarus, where part of the Russian army retreated, unquote. For iPhones, the Find My app connects with hundreds of millions of Apple devices to create a shadow network, enabling a lost or stolen phone to connect to other devices via Bluetooth and then report its location back to its owner. Ukrainians who left their homes are now posting on social media accounts maps that show their iPhones or AirPods are now in Belarus or Russia. The New York Post reported that Vadimi Semenets of Hostomel, about 17 miles northwest of Kyiv, had his AirPods stolen near the beginning of the war and has watched online as they move around the region. Quote, thanks to technology, I know where my AirPods are now, unquote, he wrote online. This has been the Daily Radio News from Wave Farm. Go to wavefarm.org for more information.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show?
Chocolate pigs are awesome.
I turned it down.
But only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Did you hear that?
No.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast from your solar-powered radio station. Thursday, the National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of showers, mainly after 2 p.m. It'll be partly sunny before then for your solar panels, and there'll be a south wind from 9 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 26 miles per hour to spin the windmills. Thursday night, again, a 30% chance of showers, mainly before 8 p.m., then becoming partly cloudy with a low of 42 and a west wind 8 to 13 miles per hour. Friday should be sunny with a high of 56 and a northwest wind 9 to 13 miles per hour with gusts as high as 23 miles per hour for flying kites or spinning windmills. Friday night, partly cloudy is the forecast with a low around 24 and a northwest wind 7 to 9 miles per hour. And Saturday should be partly sunny with a high of 59 and a low around 43. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered community radio.
You really should accept this time he's gone for good. He'll never come back now, even though he said he would. So darling, dry your eyes. So many other guys would give the world, I'm sure, to wear the shoes he wore. Oh, come on, smile a little smile for me. Rosemary, where's the use in crying? In a little while you'll see, Rosemary, you must keep on trying. I know that it hurt you bad. I know, darling, don't be sad and smile a little smile for me. Rosemary, Rosemary. You're lonely now, love's coming to an end. But darling, only now are you free to start again. Lift up your pretty chin, don't let those tears begin. You're a big girl now, and you'll pull through somehow. Oh, come on, smile a little smile for me, Rosemary. Where's the use in crying? In a little while you'll see, Rosemary, you must keep on trying. I know that it hurt you bad. I know, darling, don't be sad and smile a little smile for me, Rosemary. Rosemary.